next case for this morning, which is Danks versus Davis. Mitchell.
Good morning. Please, the court. It is undisputed that the state delayed 77 months in charging Larry Danks. It is also undisputed that no one knows why. We don't know why the state delayed. The prosecutor who ultimately tried Danks doesn't know why the state delayed. And in its brief, in this court, in the lower court, the state has offered no explanation for this delay.
Well, we had the 5 years when he was incompetent.
That is correct.
Well, that's a lot of the time. Then we're only dealing with a year and a half.
Well, Your Honor, I think that is the flaw in the state's case, is that Mr. Danks' mental incompetence did not preclude the state from filing a timely charge. And that is what we're talking about here, is a timely charge. We recognize and we concede that the state could not have tried him while he was incompetent, but they certainly could have charged him so that he would have received appointed counsel.
And what was the prejudice that he didn't get charged early?
Well, the prejudice is this. Under the Supreme Court's decision in the Doggett case, where you have a delay that is this excessive, 77 months, prejudice can be presumed. And this case stems from the recognition that when you have a lapse of time that is this extraordinary, a defense is impaired in ways that cannot be proven or ways that cannot even be identified.
But in light of his confession, how would the delay have prejudiced him?
Well, the defense that Danks asserted when he was finally charged after 77 months was an insanity defense. And here, the lapse of time is, and the prejudice that accrues from it is particularly acute when you're talking about a defense that turns on state of mind.
Well, how is that? Since he was under examination and in custody and being evaluated shortly after the crime occurred.
Well, that's precisely the evaluation that occurred when he was arrested was a mental incompetence evaluation. There was no evaluation with regard to his state of mind related to the May 11 crime. There are no reports in the record from treating psychiatrists or anyone else at any point that, and the point is, when he was ultimately charged after 77 months, it is difficult, if not impossible, to obtain reliable expert testimony related to his insanity at the time of the offense. And Indiana law requires that a defendant asserting an insanity defense produce and present medical testimony.
Of course, according to the state court docket, the court was receiving regular reports about him from the hospital, weren't they? Wasn't it, rather?
Well, there was a three-year, he was in the mental institution for 3 years before there was any docket entry, and then I believe that there were several simple minor entries, and this was related to the properly charged crime, a very simple one-line entry report received from the mental institution.
But there was also a hearing that was held in 83. To determine whether he had regained his
confidence. That is right. That Mr. Danks, the record indicates, regained his confidence, and the court found him competent at that point. And that it is in preparing to proceed to trial on the May 19 charge is when the state finally got around to charging him for the May 11 crime.
Right. Initially, just let me clarify something just from a timing standpoint. Initially, he was charged with the May 19th robbery and murder.
That is right.
So, in terms of competency and his sanity at the time, this other robbery was May 11th.
That is correct.
Just 8 days before. There was no request on the May 19th robbery to determine whether he was sane at the time of that robbery?
He did, when that case went to trial, he did interpose an insanity defense. The record in this case is unclear what precisely he presented at trial in that case.
But what I'm asking is, on the May 19th robbery and murder, was there a request to determine his sanity at the time of the robbery? Because he was charged with that. Because your point is there was no charge, right. So we couldn't get him evaluated. We didn't know. But there was a charge that was just 8 days later.
Right.
It was pending, and so that could have been determined. I'm asking,
right.
was that raised in that May 19th charge?
It's not clear from the record. We don't know. But even had counsel neglected to do that, he should have done it. And under the decisions of this court, counsel's failure to do something would be ineffective assistance of counsel. That is to say, the failure to investigate and protect an insanity defense. And the ineffective assistance of the counsel in the May 19 crime certainly cannot be a substitute for the defendant's right to investigate and present a defense with regard to the May 11 crime. Now,
did he waive his Sixth Amendment speedy trial claim by pleading guilty unconditionally?
No, I don't think we have a waiver problem here. The state concedes that it failed to raise waiver in the district court, and under the decisions of this court, we would have a waiver of waiver. But the Indiana courts also addressed this claim on the merits. And further, the nature of the delay, Judge Rovner, here, because it was a delay in charging, the banks really could not have raised the issue any sooner. That is to say, the delay had already occurred. 77 months was the delay in charging. And so he didn't have, the nature and circumstances of the delay here are such that he didn't have an abundant opportunity to raise this. But in any event, the state has waived that. Now, after 7 years, proof of any fact is difficult. But proof of something as subtle and delicate as a state of mind, which Banks' insanity defense turned on, is practically impossible. As we've said, the May 11 and May 19 crimes are separate and distinct. The jury could have found the defendant insane for one crime and not the other. Indeed, where the tables turned and the jury accepted Banks' insanity defense related to the May 19 crime, that would have raised no bar to his prosecution for the May 11 crime. So the entire 77-month delay has to be the measure of presumptive prejudice, because that is the delay and that is the prejudice that Banks confronted when he was ultimately charged. And he had no control over when he would be charged. And that delay and that prejudice accrued through no fault of his own. And again, we say, remind the court that the Doggett case is particularly instructive here, because the delay there, attributable to the state, was 6 years. And the court characterized that as an egregious persistence in failing to prosecute. And the court held that where the government's negligence causes a delay of that length, prejudice can be presumed. And that is what we have here. We have a 6.5 year delay.
No, not really, because we've got 5.5, I mean 5 of the 6.5 years get charged to him, don't they?
They don't, because it is not his mental incompetence did not preclude the state from filing a charge. And indeed, to accept the state's position in this case, you would have to say that a mentally incompetent defendant has less of an interest in a timely charge than any other defendant, and that is simply untenable.
At the trial, he raised the insanity defense, and was evidence put in as to his incompetency during that five-year period? Was that what the insanity defense was premised upon?
No, under Indiana law, the insanity defense would have to be premised on his state of mind at the time of the crime.
And so there was nothing in those psychiatric reports that dealt with that issue at all. I mean, no facts that were even part of that underlying report on competence that were utilized in the trial itself. I'm trying to determine
sure.
if any of that was introduced during the trial.
With regard to the May 19 crime, because it was a separate crime, it's not in the record here, and we simply don't know what there was. But we know that there were no reports here.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Mr.
Martin.
May it please the court. This court should affirm the district court's denial of habeas relief in this case because the court correctly determined that the Indiana Court of Appeals reasonably applied the Barker v. Wingo and Doggett holdings rendered by the United States Supreme Court to the claim of Sixth Amendment violation of Mr. Dank's speedy trial rights. Initially, I'd like to point out to the court that some of the difficulties in responding to some inquiries about what occurred with respect to the trial on the May 19th charges is due to the fact that Mr. Danks did not ever seek an appeal or challenge post-trial the judgment rendered in that case. So there's no state court record that's been compiled on that one.
Now, what about the argument that he makes that in the 5 years he was under evaluation, that was to determine his competency to stand trial, not his mental status at the time of the May 11th crime. So therefore, that shouldn't be charged against him, because since there was no charge on May 11th, there was no opportunity to get an evaluation of his state of mind on May 11th.
Your Honor, that 5 year and 1 month period of time was the time during which he had been determined incompetent by the trial court with respect to either charge. So he had not gone to trial yet on either. He had
Right, but incompetent to stand trial, that was the determination of the court, right?
Correct, Your Honor. It was not related to his state of mind relating to either offense.
Right. So what do you have to say about that? Because he's saying that, you know, someone that's in that status being held while their competency is being determined really has less rights than a normal defendant in terms of speedy trial.
I think that in this case, looking at that and trying to determine who the period of time is chargeable to is relevant to the prejudice inquiry. And it's also the considerations as set forth by Barker, the length of the delay, the reason for the delay, the defendant's assertion of his right, and the prejudice are affected by this in two ways. One, whether there was anything that could have been done judicially or by the defendant in the preparation of his defense is affected by the reasons for the delay and also results in whatever showing a defendant can make regarding prejudice. And this ties into the rationale in Barker that the appropriate way to analyze these claims is to consider all four of these factors, each in how they relate to the others. No one factor is sufficient to find a Sixth Amendment violation, nor is any factor required. And what's instructive about Doggett is that in Doggett, the United States Supreme Court, in applying the Barker standard, found that the showing of actual prejudice was not required. And this was through its consideration of the other three factors, and particularly the length of the delay and the reason for the delay.
If he waived, the speedy trial claim, should the state waiver here?
Your Honor, we did not argue waiver. I apologize to the court. I'm not certain if waiver was argued in the state courts. I do not recall. But the fact of the matter is that the Indiana Court of Appeals decided the claim, heard the claim on the merits, and decided it. So under 2254D, we simply are defending the state appellate court's adjudication of that claim. We never urged in our arguments that the claim was technically waived through failure to raise it, but it's still a valid and relevant consideration under the four-factor test set forth by Barker. And the fact of the matter is, he did not. He had an opportunity to challenge or to raise his speedy trial right before he went to trial, and he did not.
Well, he pled guilty, and
that's correct, Your Honor.
At the plea colloquy, he was advised that he was waiving his right to a speedy trial.
And I appreciate that observation, Your Honor, and I think it should have been raised and decided on that basis below. But because it had not been, and because our state appellate court assumed for the purposes of its analysis that the claim was preserved, we did not raise that claim in the district court.
So under Barker, you would say that his the guilty plea would fall under the third prong, which is the defendant's assertion of his right to a speedy trial.
That's right, and it's a particularly...
That it would fall under that prong of Barker.
Yes, and it's a particularly pointed showing regarding that prong of Barker. I want to get back to the Doggett decision, if I could, for a moment, because I think that the Indiana Court of Appeals application of it in this case was particularly well-reasoned and thoroughly discussed. And I think it's important to point out that Doggett does not stand for the proposition that should a post-accusation delay reach a particular length, that it absolves the person who's asserting the right from showing actual particularized prejudice. Rather, it acknowledges what is held in Barker, which is that in considering all of the factors together as they relate to one another, it could be the case that when a delay reaches a particular length of time, and in examining and in Doggett, this was particularly the case, the reasons for the delay, and those two factors, as they mitigate against the prejudice inquiry, may result in the court correctly determining that actualized prejudice should not be required. Rather, this the potential prejudice that might mirror in any situation of that kind would suffice. The fact of the matter is, and as these speedy trial cases are adjudicated on an ad hoc basis, this case simply is not Doggett. And Doggett, the United States Supreme Court correctly pointed out that the government, essentially this person who was sought by federal law enforcement was right under their noses for 6 years and had been living in the state and had a job as some kind of a computer administrator. And the government could have brought Doggett to trial 6 years prior had they simply looked, and they did not. And so the court looked at that abject lack of searching by the government for the person that they wanted to bring to trial and found that the 8.5-year delay, it was an 8.5-year delay in Doggett, all but something akin to 2 years of it, was completely avoidable by the exercise of any diligence by the state. So because of the length and because of the reason, and Doggett did challenge, he did raise his speedy trial claim at the appropriate time, but the court doesn't make much of that in the Doggett holding. The court found that the showing of particularized prejudice was not required. That should not be the result that obtains here, and the Indiana Court of Appeals reasonably applied Doggett in drawing that conclusion. Here, what we have is a 1-year and 4-month delay that was due to the state's failure to act, and the state court did find that the state was not diligent for that 1-year and 4-month period. However, that does not place this case within the purview of Doggett. Rather, what it does is exceed the 1-year period of time that's discussed by Barker and some of the other cases, which simply triggers the inquiry. So that's what the delay did here. The Indiana Court of Appeals, in a very, very thoughtful and well-reasoned way, applied the four-pronged inquiry, considered Doggett, discussed Doggett correctly at some length, and rendered the right decision. We believe that that decision is correct, but on habeas review, it need not be correct as long as it is reasonable. And we think that at the bare minimum is eminently reasonable. I'm sorry.
I'm just freezing.
If the court has no further questions, we would just ask the court to affirm the district court's decision denying habeas relief.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Mr. Mitchell? We'll give you a minute. Your time is up.
Your Honors, this case is controlled by Doggett. Mr. Danks confessed to this crime shortly after his arrest. This was an uncomplicated crime. The state knew that he committed this crime, and yet they did not charge him for 77 months. And under the state's theory of the case, it should be permitted to take an indefinite amount of time to charge a mentally incompetent defendant. And that plainly cannot be correct. A mentally incompetent defendant has the same interests in a timely charge as any other defendant. The prejudice here could have been avoided had the state filed a timely charge. And when you consider the extraordinary length of the delay, coupled with the state's complete failure to explain it, and the prejudice that necessarily accrued from it, it compels the conclusion that Mr. Dang's Sixth Amendment right to speedy trial was violated. We ask that you reverse the judgment below.
Thank you. Mr. Mitchell, thanks also for taking the appointment in this case. We